Here's a question. How old do you have to be to write a book? The answer's coming up on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Deb Bowen is busy these days getting kids to write books. Garrison Keillor keeps busy with the Writer's Almanac. We'll hear from both of them today on Scribble. Okay.
Well,
go ahead.
Deb, why don't you, you're here because a couple of weeks ago my wife heard you at a program describing the project that you invented some years ago and have had great success with. Why don't you take us back to the beginning and tell us what the project is and how in the world you got going on this?
Well, it started in 2003, actually, when my daughter, who was an eighth grader at the time, asked me to take her to the Jewish synagogue and hear a Jewish survivor speak. And she would get extra credit for social studies. She was an avid reader. She was interested in the topic. So off we went, and I did not realize we had Jewish survivors that lived in the Quad Cities area. I was just unaware of it. And I was so impressed with the program that night and with our Jewish community welcoming people of all faiths to come into their synagogue and share that very horrific period of time with us. There was a speaker from Dallas, Texas, but we also had about 12 Jewish survivors that lived here in the area, and three of them were named Esther. Esther Avrick, Esther Katz, and Esther Schiff. And something about them, I don't know if it was their names or their presence that night, they were so elegant looking, they didn't look like they had suffered a day in their life, and yet they had had such a horrific childhood. And something in me wanted their stories told for future generations. So I brainstormed that, and I came up with an idea to have kids hear them and then write and illustrate a children's book about their life.
Why kids?
Because I think kids can do great things, and because I think it's more powerful when kids do it. I didn't know what I would get. You never do with kids, right?
Mm-hmm. But we're talking kids of what age?
18 and younger.
Okay.
So middle school age and high school age at first.
Okay.
A couple elementary school age kids have done it, but mostly it's middle and high schoolers.
I see, you know, the title is A Book by Me, and that has a real pull to it. You know, why shouldn't I write a book? But do you get, writing a book is not a simple matter.
It is not a simple matter.
So how many kids do you find who are willing to go the long haul and write something that really qualifies as a book?
Well, we've had hundreds successfully complete the program.
Really?
And we've had some that have met someone from the World War II generation and then not follow through, because that's human nature, right? You think you can, and then you can't. But most of the kids do successfully produce a book, and they learn a lot. Through the process, they learn about editing, which we all think we write something and it's good to
right.
go, but it's not.
Is this just about kids writing about books, for example, what they hear about the Holocaust, or are they writing books about their own lives?
They are writing books about someone who lived through something in history. It started with the Holocaust, of course, and then Alan Ross from the Jewish Federation asked that I would get some stories of World War II veterans who liberated concentration camps. And as I heard those stories right along with the kids, I knew that there were powerful stories here besides the liberators. There were Pearl Harbor survivors here and all kinds of stories. And so we created a hero series. So it's Heroes, Human Rights, and Holocaust, three different series under the Book by Me brand.
Mm-hmm. How do you recruit kids for this?
I speak in schools, or I speak at church programs. I collect them all kinds of ways, to be honest. Sometimes in a doctor's waiting room, I've found a kid that I struck up a conversation, and they ended up.
And are these parts of a school program? You go into a school and do
sometimes
a program?
It is. Yes, Rockbridge Schools just had a big program last spring. They had me come in just before the break, and I spoke all day. One of my most shy authors went to that high school, and this was the middle school part. And she came in to speak, and I thought she will speak maybe 2 minutes because I knew her. And she was so passionate about the man she wrote about. She spoke for 10 minutes, and she got 24 kids to sign up to write. So we teamed those kids up and did 12 projects at one rural school. And most of the kids there had never met a Jewish person. And two boys interviewed Sam Gilman, and who's a well-known Jewish person here in our community. And we left his place, and I asked him what was the most exciting thing, because they were overjoyed, you could tell. And one looked at me and said, I finally have met a Jewish person. I'm excited.
Well, do you go out and find the people for them to interview?
We did. For this project, it was Rockridge School, very rural area. And we were on television twice. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were calling us asking if we'd interview their father or grandfather.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it isn't strictly a Jewish project.
No, not at all. Okay. Not at all.
And you have written a book yourself.
I have. I wrote a book called A Walk with Esther. There's a certain magic that happens between that generation, whether it's a Jewish person or a veteran or a civil rights advocate from, you know, back in those days. There's a magic that happens when that student meets them. I think I can best describe it as honor. They learn how to honor somebody and what they did for us, because it makes a big difference. It made a big difference, and they start to put two and two together, especially the ones that interview the veterans. The boys start thinking, he's not that much older. He wasn't that much older when he went to Germany than I am right now. I've had so many kids tell me that. So there's a magic that happens, and I started to write it down just for me. I was just journaling, and then I thought, you know, someday I'm going to publish a book. And my mentor was Ida Kramer, who's very famous here in the Quad Cities. She was a Holocaust historian that taught me so much. And when she was failing and passed away, I decided that I was going to go ahead and publish my work. And I'd been editing it and tinkering with it, and I got serious and got it done.
Mm-hmm. Is it about the three Esters?
It is about the three Esters, and also about others that I've met, the veterans and others. Anne Frank had a pen pal in Iowa over near Burlington. That's a great story in my series. I think all of these stories make it real. They make it real to kids. That's what teachers are telling me when we get them put in the classrooms with grant monies. They say this makes it real. You know, the textbook is all well and good. It's got a lot of facts and dates, but you've brought the stories to life through these young people.
What fascinates me is that I lived through all this.
Right.
The Second World War is as alive in my memory as anything that happened last year. And all through the civil rights things. And when I speak to young people, the thing that overwhelms me is they don't know any of this in the way that I know it.
Right.
I lived through it. And how do we transmit that? How do we bring these things alive? Nowadays, we take improved civil rights for granted. We take women's liberation for granted. But that wasn't always the case. And I've lived long enough to see a sea change in society, in attitudes, and so on. And to appreciate that, you know, that's what history does for us.
It does.
But this is a very immediate way of preserving history.
Every story, there's something to learn from that person's experience. One of the Rockridge stories was about a woman that went to Berlin after the war ended and through the Women's Army Corps. And the kids weren't even writing down. She was saying how she had taken dictation for General Eisenhower and had Thanksgiving lunch with Eleanor Roosevelt. And the kids weren't writing this down. I said, you've got to write this down. This is right. So valuable.
Right.
This is what she experienced is amazing, and you've got to express it and teach the kids. You know, they're not just writing a story down to be writing it down. They are keeping that story alive for that person. It's their legacy. And sometimes their own children and grandchildren don't know the full story until my kids get it written down.
Are you the one who does the editing then, or do these kids practice editing each other?
The kids practice editing. Their teacher, if their teacher helps me as a writing coach, which I really need these days because I've got a lot of stories happening. Dr. Marietta Castle is retired from Western Illinois University. She and Dr. Maxine Russman give a lot of time to help me edit. Dr. Art Pitts is always there to help me as an advisor. He's really into the civil rights stories of the local ones, and we're trying to get those written down. Just interviewed Father Moddett right before he passed away to get his story. He was right there walking with Martin Luther King Jr. Amazing stories, you know, extraordinary stories, but very ordinary people.
You know, someone once said that we lose over two generations, we lose all knowledge, even in our own family. And I thought back, I don't know anything about my grandparents.
I know.
At all. I remember Granddaddy Wooten used to sit and smoke cigars and read Westerns, but that's all I remember. I don't know anything of his life. And it is amazing how stories, intimate stories, can be lost because there is not the transmission. Even of my own parents, I had to sit my mother down once and say, where all have you lived since I remember we moved a lot?
Right.
I couldn't keep up.
Yes.
Because back in the Depression, they were just going from job to job, see what they could find.
Yeah.
And it is amazing how much we lose. And when a person dies, all the information in their head is gone. It's just gone.
I know. I know.
So that is, it's not just for heroes, but for ordinary people. This is... would be a very good exercise for grandkids to talk to their grandparents.
I agree.
How do the books get published?
With grant monies, it is the best way. I'm not independently wealthy, so I can't do it
right.
All. But when I get grant monies, we put them in the schools immediately. Recently, I've been putting them up on Amazon.com because it's just not affordable for me to print extra copies of every single title I've got. So many. I've got over 100 titles now, and we've got 36 of them out on Amazon. But it's a tedious process, you know, and I'm self-taught. But I've been helped here at Augustana College, actually. Doug Chopp and the kids at The Edge have helped greatly. They put all the books together and get them ready to go to the printer. It's just been one of those things. Doug taught me everything I know about branding. I didn't even, you know how to begin to do that. But he held my hand, bless his heart. And together we're getting it done because it's an important thing to do.
Yeah, it is amazing the cooperation you can get from people, that the special knowledge and information you need is there if you can just find the person who has it. And quite often, people are very willing to share.
That's right.
Because, you know, it gives them a chance to flex their intellectual muscles and so on. And the fact that you're passing that on to somebody else has real meaning.
It does.
Do you have any feeling that you've done it long enough now so that some of the kids are graduated from high school.
Right.
Has it influenced them long term?
Absolutely. I've got some that are going to be social studies teacher because of this project. I have a young lady who learned her grandfather's story because actually she goes to school here at Augie. And she learned his story because she wrote it through a book by me. And when she just made the decision to go to Augustana, her grandfather called me just before he passed, just months before he passed, actually, and said, "You have made such a difference in my granddaughter's life, and she is going to be very successful thanks to your project." And he knew that at times, you know, when you're developing something new, you can have times where you're very discouraged
right.
and you don't think you're ever going to get it, and you don't think you're ever going to be able to, quit tapping my husband on the back for some money to keep going. And he was always one of my greatest encouragers. And
Is there time, Don? Could you read a page or two from one of the books so we can hear what the students actually write?
Sure. This is a book about Ida Kramer. It's titled The Inspiring Life of Ida Kramer, written by Rachel Cupp and illustrated by Jasmine Mendez. And page one, Ida was born in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, to Jewish immigrants. She grew up in an area of town called Strawberry Mansion, which was a very loving Jewish community. Her family consisted of a mother, a father, and eventually a little sister named Roz. Their father was a tailor, and their mother was a seamstress. I think one of the most compelling components is the artwork. I think really helps.
I had no idea there was artwork, but
I
can see it.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Who does that?
Children. Everything is done by children except...
You're kidding.
No, I'm not.
That's
this little girl was 17 years old that did this.
That's great stuff. And that is, those are beautiful books.
Thank you.
And the illustration, and that is a very good thing because it is not likely that a youngster is going to write at great length. I remember the first books I read in the first grade, I was disappointed because there are only 5 pictures in the whole thing.
Right.
But the story was quite compelling. But this way, by illustrating them, that makes a book, and that makes a book that's attractive for youngsters to
read. I think
read.
So, too. And this is such a difficult subject, especially the Holocaust series, such a difficult subject to digest. I think the artwork is the thing that helps us. And I remember the first time I was distributing books, I was at a principal's meeting, and I was going to give copies of the books to every elementary school principal and every middle school principal. I didn't think high school kids would want to read these. And the high school principals raised their hand and said, can we have them? We have so many low-level readers, and we have kids that won't check out a library book. Your books are almost like magazines, and they're not intimidating at all.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, we think our kids will read them. And by golly, they were right. I've had so many high school kids stop me and say thank you for putting these books together for kids because they learned so much outside of the classroom just picking them up in their school library.
Do they go out to all the school libraries in the Quad Cities?
They do. They do. Different books for different, you know, as depending on
right.
what the grant allows.
You know, we continually underestimate the ability of high school students. I found when I started teaching that there's no limit to what they can do if they are inspired to do it.
That's right.
Once they have a motivation, it's like setting this gigantic machine in motion. They can do anything.
And that goes for all of us, but I agree.
Right.
Kids haven't been given enough credit, I think, for all the things they can do.
It's the business, you know, we do schools in a certain set way. It's all made efficient. But if there's a way to get to an individual kid and light that fire, they'll take off on their own.
That's really right.
That's
right.
So that's a great, great project, Deb.
Thank you.
I'm really impressed.
Thank you.
With the idea, the fact that you carried it through, and with the product. I mean, this is extraordinary. A book by me. How do people get in touch with you?
My website is www.abookbyme.com. They can figure out how to get a hold of me there.
Abookbyme.com. Mm-hmm. Can't be simpler.
No.
Here's your chance, Rolf. You too can be published.
Right. I wish I'd bumped into Deb when I was at a teachable age.
Same here. Oh, well, but you've taught us a lot today, and I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Deb Bowen. Thanks for having me.
And with that, we will turn to our usual friend for the Writer's Almanac. Support for Writer's Almanac on WVIK comes from the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information at bloodcenter.org. Well, that was something.
It was. It's enough almost to make me wish I went back and could start over again instead of.
Yeah. Deb Bowen was, and she left some samples of a book by me. I was wondering if we should put these in the Scribble Library.
And if you have any interest at all in helping her or participating or doing this kind of thing, you know, I think when you told her students can do amazing things, you're absolutely right. If you give students a chance, I mean, and some of these are grade school kids that are doing these programs.
I have 3 here, The Inspiring Life of Ida Kramer. There's a gal I remember with great affection. And then Oceans Apart, The Connection Between Al Frank and Her Small-Town Pen Pal. And We Are One, The Miraculous Story of Inga Auerbacher. child survivor of the Holocaust and her dog. These are in number, books 77, 38, and 78. I think I'll put these in the Scribble Library.
Do that and encourage people to come in and take a look. You can even read them while you're standing there.
Yeah, but, and we have books out there, by the way. I've been adding some of my own, not the lofty titles that Roald has been contributing, but there are a couple of mysteries and biographies and so on that you might find interesting. Just come to the library, the lobby of WVIK, and maybe I'll put the Mama Bear's Manifesto into that, too, that we talked about last week or 2 weeks ago. Okay. Anyway, that was something exciting.
Well, in fact, I was going to recommend, I have another Charles Williams book I'm going to recommend at some point, and I was going to do that today, but listening to her talk about the generations that are disappearing and telling their stories before they're all gone, Holocaust survivors, World War II people, let me go back to two golden oldies that, for various reasons, two people that read for VIK have read my copy of. Mary Ellen Hind is one of them, and then Joni Demmer, the English teacher at North Scott High School that we interviewed a few months ago. I had both of them read Ole Rolvag's Giants in the Earth back in the 1920s, it was written. It's the story of Norwegian immigration into South Dakota and the difficulties they faced facing the land there. Immigrants have always had it tough. And usually immigrant stories are stories of people that move into ghettos in cities. But the people that moved on to the good earth also had incredible problems. The title Giants in the Earth, it deals with a family that that immigrates to South Dakota before Little House on the Prairie starts settlements going. Giants in the Earth is the story of a family that comes out there. Most people, I think the title Giants in the Earth refers to the great people, the heroic settlers that settled the land. That's not true. Giants are the giants that are the land itself, the incredible hardships that just living in that land without being prepared for a South Dakota winter, for a blizzard, for crops freezing, for locusts eating up your crops. The Norwegians are used to trolls and Nisa and little elves playing tricks on you. But here, the giants are out to get you.
Yeah.
And these giants are the forces of nature against which they barely, if at all, survived. That's a good book for I often wonder why that isn't more often taught in the high school, because it's a good book and it's a safe book, too.
Mm-hmm.
And
let me mention, too, that thinking about that, people who lived in the plains, imagine that. A woman married to a settler, they come out to the plains and they settle, but there's no wood. No wood.
There isn't.
You have to live in a sod house. You dig a hole in the ground and you live in it. And think what an adjustment that was for people.
Well, if you want wood, you have to go miles and miles with a horse and cart and drag a few logs at a time out there.
Yeah, and you can just get enough to put a shelter over the pit, and that becomes your home, a sod house.
The Norwegian version is Giants in the Earth, but there's also a companion piece by a Swedish writer, Vilhelm Moberg, Unto a Good Land. And that deals with the Swedish immigration to this area. It includes Bishop Hill in it, for example.
Well,
and either one of those, if you want to know what it's like to be an immigrant, way back even at the beginning, go back and read these books.
And we hope you'll want to come back next week when Roald Wheaton and I'll be back for another session of Scribble.